You're listening to Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is the ever-entertaining Renato Gonçalves. Renato is a writer at SB Nation's Barcelona blog, Barça Blaugrans. He is here to talk about Barcelona's aggregate loss to Juventus, but seeing as this is an Atletico-centric podcast, we're also going to discuss Atletico's 1-1 draw at Leicester City on Tuesday, which meant Los Colchoneros qualify for a third Champions League semifinal in 4 years. We're going to look back on the quarterfinals, preview the semifinal draw, talk about some news, and a whole lot more. This is a highly entertaining episode, was a lot of fun to record, and it's a must listen. And you'll get to listen to it right after this.
Many puns I've heard this morning with the Juventus players. But it's in Portuguese, so I don't think you understand any of that.
I probably won't, but give me some highlights.
Juventus players it's quite easy to make a lot of stupid jokes with their names in Portuguese, and that's been something that's cheered me up. But anyway, life goes on, right?
It does. Have you partaken in making up some of these puns, or are you just laughing at them?
No, I'm just laughing at them. Right now, I'm too hurt to make any jokes with Juventus right now. I like them; it's a good team, but they hurt me yesterday.
Yeah, are you proud of the way Barcelona left the tournament? Because I saw the front page of I think it was Mundo Deportivo this morning. They were like leaving with pride. So are you proud of Barca?
Yeah, my recap for Barça Blaugrana yesterday was. At least we tried. So,
yeah.
Because I've seen Barca go out, and I'll give you an example. When we went out to Atleti for the first time at the Calderon in 2014, there was no fight for the team in the second leg. It was awful to watch. It was very, 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 very bad. And when we went out at the Calderon last year, it was also very bad. And the only thing we can claim from that game is we should have had a penalty that was given as a free kick. But,
at the very end, yeah.
Yes, I think it was a Koke handball, which was given as handball, but it was clearly inside the box and was given outside. But that doesn't matter anymore. But I still remember that was the only thing that I remember from that game because the game was pretty awful. But yesterday I saw a lot of fight from the team. I was like the Camp Nou because the Camp Nou was very, very appreciative of the team at the end, and I shared their feelings. I think the team gave me a reason to believe that they could have done something better, especially in the first leg, and we went down swinging. I think that's something that makes me proud, really, because we're not really known for fighting, for being a team that goes after. Something, and after the comeback against PSG, you kind of sense that maybe that fighting spirit is going to come out of us a lot more. And I think that's something that sometimes just trying is enough because the other team is better than you and you have to accept it. And Juventus was the better team in both games, very clearly, even though yesterday they were just defending, but they did their job to perfection. And we lost to the better team, but at least we tried, especially yesterday. So it makes me a little less sad to see the effort that the players put on, which is not something Barca fans are used to.
Sure. Yeah, you guys didn't go out without a fight, for sure. But Juve definitely a bit better, especially defensively. Their organization, Bonucci, Chiellini, just top-drawer center backs, and it was, I think Barcelona had, what, one shot on target through Messi? I think that was it, their only shot on target.
Yeah, and I tweeted this. We had only one shot on target, but I can safely say all the other shots were either just wide or just over the bar. All the shots were so close to either hitting the post or going on target. It just wasn't our night. And we could have played 200 minutes. Not just 90, and we wouldn't have scored. It was that unlucky. It was that of course, not just unlucky. It was a great defensive effort by Juve, but our shots just wouldn't go in. Doesn't matter. And that just happened, I guess.
And a much stronger mentally team than PSG, for sure. No question.
Yeah. When we play PSG, we ask, who's your daddy? And that's what we do.
Yeah.
We just know that we're better than them, and they just know that we're better than them, and they just cannot get over the hurdle that they cannot think that they can beat us. And Juve always thought that they had a chance, and they obviously did. So,
like, I'm still so surprised that PSG didn't just sack Emery, like, 10 minutes after that game ended. Like, they let him continue in his job. That's staggering to me. Like, you cannot possibly continue in that job after that kind of result. That's just my feeling.
I don't know. Thank goodness I'm not a PSG fan.
Right.
But if I was a PSG fan, I would be mad at the players, because I know that Emery game planned to be behind all the time, but I would be mad at Cavani for missing the easy chances, which is his career. He's
right.
Based on missing easy chances and scoring amazing goals. Yeah. And Di Maria for missing another sitter that he had, and also probably the referee a little bit, because we cannot deny that Barca had a big help from the referee in that comeback. But I think Emery, after Carlo Ancelotti, is the best coach PSG had since they became rich.
Yeah.
So I would fault the players a little bit more than the coach. But I do understand the argument for sacking him, because you just cannot lose 6-1 after winning 4-0 in the first leg.
You can't.
You just cannot. Doesn't matter if you're playing Barca or Basel. You have to qualify after a 4-0 win. You just have to.
Like,
and he didn't, but I blame the players first and him second, I think.
Like, this would never happen, but imagine if, like, Simeone's Atletico blew that kind of a lead. What the reaction would be. I mean, there would be fans calling for Cholo's head.
Yeah, and he'd probably kill himself. I don't think he would take that.
I'm not sure he could survive that. Like,
if you thought
the couple weeks after Milan were challenging, this would be even more so for him.
Absolutely.
That situation. So I'm going to ask you, Renato, to take on a couple roles here. First, I want you to put yourself in Lionel Messi's shoes, and considering the kind of political upheaval, I guess not really upheaval, but considering the political situation at Barcelona, Messi still doesn't have a new contract. It's been heavy Messi dependencia this season. And again, he still doesn't have a new contract. He has no midfield to work with. If you were Lionel Messi, would you even consider leaving Barcelona?
No, because I love that damn club too much. That's who he is. He's not.
That's fair.
I don't think it's even close to just passing through his mind. That thought is never going to enter his mind. He's never going to think about leaving. Because, let's be honest, the only reason he's probably alive is because of Barcelona.
Yeah.
Because Barcelona was the team that paid for his medical treatment. If without Barcelona, that guy would be a dwarf, literally. So he's probably alive, and he surely has this amazing life because of the club. He has a huge talent, obviously, and he's the best player ever, I think. I don't want to get into that debate, but whatever. and he's obviously a ridiculous player, but he owes his life to that club. So he loves the club too much to even think about leaving. Of course, everything can happen. You never say never, but I am 200% sure that Messi is not going to even think about leaving. So I don't see him leaving ever. I see everybody else leaving, but Messi, I don't.
But not Messi.
Part of it is me not wanting that to happen, of course. I don't want to see a scenario where we don't have Messi until he's retired. But I don't see him leaving at the prime of his career, not even to Pep's arms again. He's not gonna go to Man City, which is, I think, the only club he would consider because of Pep and the bosses at Man City, which are Messi's friends too. But I think he just loves the club too much. And every time Pep is asked about signing Messi, he says Messi is going to retire at Barca. And if Pep thinks Messi is retiring at Barca, you can basically guarantee that. So he's not leaving. I don't want to think that, and I also think that that won't happen.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Now, if you were the sporting director, what changes you'll have fun with this? What changes would you make this summer? Because I think there are quite a few that need to be made.
If I'm the sporting director, I'm resigning because the current sporting director sucks. If I am the new sporting director, I would sign Paulo Dybala because, as you know, that's a dream of mine.
It is.
I didn't need to see the first leg of the Champions League to know that dude has to play at Barcelona.
You just got that new contract, though.
That obviously just confirmed.
Yeah.
So we have to sign Paulo Dybala. And we also need a right back. We need a center back. We need a left back. We need a center midfielder. We need another center midfielder. We need a couple of wingers. And we need a good backup striker. Seriously, I'm not joking.
That is a laundry list.
We need a lot of new people because, and I wrote about this. There's a post that I wrote for Barca Bloggers, which was just one morning this week. I was just so frustrated, and I woke up and I had to write something. And the title is Barca's Transfer Policy, WTF, because that's what it became. I remember when we signed Thierry Henry, and Barca's president said, to play in Barcelona, you either have to come from the academy or you have to be absolutely exceptional to come from the outside. And of course, that president made some mistakes. He signed, for instance, Alexander Hleb. He signed Good Johnson. He signed those kind of people. But he also signed Thierry Henry. He signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic. The squad we had when Pep Guardiola was here, or the other coaches, was absurdly better than the current squad. You cannot debate that.
Mm-hmm.
And you only come from outside if you're exceptional. If you're not exceptional, you don't come from outside. We try to find people at the academy. And that's what I'll do. I hate this conversation that the academy, if it's not a Xavi, an Iniesta, a Messi, or a Busquets, or a Pique, or a Puyol, you don't have enough quality to play at Barca. Those are some of the best players in the history of the game, and you're not going to produce those all the time. But there are good players in our academy. And I think that what we do at the moment is we ship those players either on loan or we sell them to other clubs. And then because a Barca player is so different than the rest of the players because they're brought up in this unique system and this unique philosophy, those players are kind of lost. So when you look at them from the outside perspective, you think they're not good enough. Like, for instance, Deulofeu or Bellerin, which are players currently linked with returns to Barca. And I would absolutely welcome those guys back because as soon as they step into the club again, they know what they have to do to be successful. They know how they have to play. So what I would do as a sporting director is to only sign exceptional players, which is Dybala, Verratti, players of that quality, and fill the rest of the squad with the academy because we have really good players. Like I said, Bellerin, Deulofeu, we have Alenia, the midfielder, we have Sergi Samper, who sadly, it didn't work for him at Granada because Paco Gemes was sacked so early. Because if Paco Gemes was still the coach of Granada, I think Sergi Samper would be one of the best players in La Liga this season. I have no doubt about that because he is amazing and he should play at Barca. And I think he's coming back next season. I think you bring back Munir because he's the perfect backup because he's competent and he's not going to ask for minutes. You'll bring back Sandro Ramirez because, of course, he scored a goal against Barca to remind that he's a good backup striker instead of spending $30 million on Paco Alcácer. We need to sell Andre Gomes because I don't know what I'll do when I see that guy because he's really, really bad. You sell Arda Turan because it was really expensive and somehow China wants to double his transfer fee, so you just sell him. Doesn't matter if he's good or not.
You need to let that happen.
Make the money and you buy Verratti. It's that simple to me. So I would do that. Basically you'd have to remake the whole bench because the experiments this season with the bench failed because you didn't promote academy players and you bought ridiculously expensive and really bad players this season to be on the bench, and that was a really, really bad decision from a horrible sporting director. And we need change because if we keep believing that this guy is gonna make good signings, we're gonna be challenging for the top eight for the next few years because he's that bad. That's how bad he is.
Yeah,
and I want that out. Sorry, rant over.
That is good. That is in part why I have you on this podcast, for rants of that quality. That was great.
Well, thank you. I'm really frustrated. The last podcast I was on, I told you that I couldn't wait for the season to be over, and that was, I think, 2 weeks before the PSG comeback.
Yeah.
So, of course, I had no idea that would happen, but as soon as we got Juventus, I thought, oh God, the season has to be over because this is going to be ugly. And it was ugly. And I can't wait for the season to be over, for the sporting director to go. Thank goodness Lucho hasn't changed his mind because of the PSG game, and he's also going. I think we're going to find whoever kidnapped Jorge Sampaoli and bring the real dude in.
Bring him to justice.
And I'm just kidding. I think we're going to promote Unsue from assistant manager to actual coach, and he's really good. And I really believe that dude has what it takes to make us play better next season. I like him. I really do. After Sampaoli, I think he's the best choice. And remake the bench, fire the sporting director, tell the president to shut up, stop making deals with companies and focus on football a little bit. And yeah, that's it.
No, those are all very fair points. There needs to be a rethink here. There needs to be a reboot. This is now 3 quarterfinal exits in 4 years, two of them at the hands of Atletico, one at Juventus. And yeah, for a club of this stature and this size, that's unacceptable. There needs to be a lot of changes.
Yeah, well, we're basically we're literally walking on our name, Barcelona, and our player, Lionel Messi. That's why we're alive right now. And that wasn't the case when we were really good.
Yep, it was more about the team.
So, a lot of changes need to happen.
Yep. So, from Barcelona to Atletico, as this is an Atletico Madrid-centric podcast, and I do want to talk a little bit about them. Atletico are through to a third Champions League semifinal in 4 years. It's still incredible to say that, as they went to Leicester and drew 1-1 against the Foxes, advancing 2-1 on aggregates. Saúl Ñíguez scoring yet another big goal, as he so often does in the bigger games in the Champions League. He opened the scoring before half an hour with a really powerful header past Kasper Schmeichel. Jamie Vardy equalized just after the hour with a goal-mount scramble, and it fired into the top of the goal. Nothing that really could be done there. And Leicester outshot Atletico 23-6, had 56% possession, and as predicted, that didn't really work in their favor, as Atletico kind of out-Leicestered them. So, Atleti are through, and they did make it kind of tough, as they like to do, but all that matters is they're through. Leicester played really hard. They battled. They worked really, really hard to get to this point. They fully deserved it. Their fans were great, but in the end, Atletico were just of too much quality.
Yeah, Atleti is the better team, and it was clear from the start of both games. And I never really had Atleti in doubt, to be honest. I thought Leicester was really the surprise of the tournament and everything. And I think the only reason they beat Sevilla is because they met Sevilla in the first game of their collapse, which was the first leg of the round of 16, which was that game when they started just to go down and inexplicably, really. Because, let's be honest, Leicester should have been eliminated in the first leg. Because Sevilla absolutely destroyed them, but they somehow made it through. But then I never really doubted Atleti, because Atleti are what Leicester want to be, and you cannot does Leicester project, if you want to call it that, because it was never a project to win the Premier League or the Champions League, obviously, but their project of this team that defends really well and counterattacks really well and has this really quick forward who can do a lot of things for them, and then a great goalkeeper. They've been doing that for a year and a half. Atleti have done that for 5-6 years. So Atleti are just better at what they do, and Leicester tried to do the same and just couldn't. The master was the master, and the student was the student. That's clearly what happened. And Atleti were fortunate in the first leg, because it clearly wasn't a penalty, but they still deserve to go through, because they were the better team in both legs, and though Leicester pressured them in the second one, but they were never really in danger. They cleared it. It was a lot like the Juventus Barca game, where the Atleti defense just blocked everything.
Yep.
That's just what happened, and they were the better team, and they deservedly go through, because they need to win the Champions League before Simeone goes, because what that guy has done with this team, if he doesn't win the Champions League, it's really unfair on him. I think this could be the year, because I really don't trust Real Madrid. Of course, if it's a final against Atleti, we know who's winning. Exactly. I'm sorry. But I really don't trust them. And if it's a semifinal, if it's a Madrid derby in the semifinal, I very much fancy Atleti to go through, because they're clearly the better team. In the team concept and the concept of team, they're better. And they have less talent, but not it's not that big of a difference as it was 3-4 years ago. So. And we saw at the Bernabeu what happened when Simeone did a little tactical tweak. Atleti took that game over, and I think he'll be prepared for a potential semifinal to just take both games over and go through. I really believe this could be Atleti's year. And if they get Real Madrid in the semifinal, I think you guys are taking this one. I really do.
I hope you're right. And in a perfect world, Real Madrid would have been eliminated by Bayern Munich. But, of course, this is not a perfect world. This is the Champions League, and weird things keep happening to Real Madrid. Amazing how that works. But I would almost rather draw Real Madrid in a semifinal than a one-off final, where two of the past 3 years, very strange things have happened, very unfortunate, unlucky bounces, and Real Madrid have walked away with the trophy both times. Over two legs, Atletico, I think would have a better chance. Of course, that happened before. In 2014-15, Atletico were eliminated after a goalless first leg. And the second leg of that tie, Atleti were way too conservative, way too much respect to Real Madrid. I can't remember more than, I think, two or three occasions where Atletico were able to go forward and counter. Then Arturian got sent off, and that was the beginning of the end for him. And then Chicharito scored late, and Real Madrid went to the semifinal. So I would almost rate Atletico's chances as being better over two legs, but I don't know. I do want to talk more about the semifinals in a minute, though, because I'm not really sure if I prefer anyone in the semifinals. And we ran a poll on the end of the counter on Twitter yesterday, where you know we asked who do you want in the semifinals, and people overwhelmingly said Monaco.
These people are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well talk about this now. Monaco, I would rather face them in a one-off, so where they can't get an away goal or two or five, because they scored three against City, they scored three against Dortmund, and they won both ties.
Yeah, in a one-off against Monaco, you'll bet that they're so young that at some point the experience will favor Atleti, because in a one-off you need to be lucky, but experience also counts. So let's say in a one-off final, Atleti get an early goal, and then all of a sudden Monaco have to chase the game, and they're too young, and they leave spaces, and then Atleti get a second goal before halftime, and all of that, which is a very very possible scenario, I would say. In the two leg, I would hate to see them, because they're not afraid to attack, because they know that if they concede, they're gonna score. Especially away, they know they're gonna score because that's how good they are.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good your defense is; they're gonna score against Juventus or Atleti if they face them. I have no doubt they are going to score because
that's what they do.
They're just overwhelming. They're just overwhelming. They're gonna attack you until you give up, and it doesn't matter which team they're facing; they're going to score. That's just what they do. So,
and logic would dictate that, you know, Monaco are the preferred opponent because, oh, they're so young, they don't have the pedigree that Madrid or Juve have. They've played, I think, four more Champions League games than everyone. They entered in the second qualifying round way back last summer. So logic would dictate that they're the preferred opponent, but I don't think so. I don't want Mbappe or Falcao even getting a goal or two at the Calderon to take back to Stade Louis II. I don't want that. I'd rather see them in a one-off.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, for instance, if you look at the matchups, if you play Juventus, the one that punches the most is going to win, basically. Against Real Madrid, I think Atleti has the upper hand tactically. And if Real Madrid's biggest stars aren't in a good day, and by biggest stars I mean Cristiano Ronaldo and a linesman, Atleti are the, I think, the better team. So I think you match up better against Madrid and Juventus than you do against Monaco, because they're just going to score. I have no idea. I have no idea how they score so much, but they do, and
that's just inevitable.
You're going to concede against them. You're going to.
Yeah.
And if you concede at the Calderon and the second leg is in Monaco, you're dead. You're dead.
Yeah,
because they'll score even more at home than they did away,
and they can defend at home too. They only conceded once against City and once against Dortmund, and they really controlled both games. They were dominant in both games. I do not want to play Monaco.
And if we remember once when Leonardo Jardim first took over, that team was a counter-attacking team.
They were a great defensive team. Yeah,
yeah, they were very defensive. So if they have to go back to being a park the bus team, they can beat that very comfortably, and they have no problem doing that. But they also know now how to attack, and they're a really scary team. But in the final, I think their inexperience would catch up with them. But in the two leg, tie, as they proved against City and Dortmund, who are better than them, if you look at they have more quality, but they can still score. So I would hate the prospect of facing them. I really, even in the final, of course, I would hate to face them, because I think they'll score once or twice in the final, but I think the chances are higher if it's a one-off than a two. Like, I have no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, I agree. And let's see, we talked about Real Madrid and how I think the chances against them would be slightly higher, still not great, but higher in over two legs than opposed to a one-off, which leaves Juventus. And I think Atleti and Juve are dead even. Like, seriously, these teams are equal. Great goalkeeping, great defense, good, not amazing, but really good midfield, and elite counterattacking pace and finishing. And two great managers, experienced, with things to prove. Like, I don't think there would be a goal scored over 210 minutes in this tie. They are that even.
Yeah, I agree. I think.
So if we were to draw Juve in the semifinals, it would just be a bloodbath.
Yeah, like I said, it'd be like a Money in the Bank match.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. And,
like, you have the Champions League final at the top of the ladder, and you have to kill yourself until the other opponent isn't strong enough to climb the ladder with you. That's basically what it is. And you can throw yourself off the ladders to hit the other people. So it's that crazy of a... They would kill each other. I think Godin would leave that with a broken leg and still play the second leg.
Oh, yeah.
With one leg, Chiellini is going to cut his head because he always does.
Bonucci would be missing a hand. Someone would have cut his hand off at this point.
Yeah. Buffon is gonna break his hand, making a miraculous save and hitting his hand on the post.
He'll
and
still be fine.
Play the second leg.
He'll still be fine.
Dybala would score a bicycle kick, and then Griezmann would equalize with a bicycle kick, because that's the only way you see goals scored. If two spectacular goals by the two biggest stars, I think that's the only way you see that happening. It would be, I tell you, it would be the most fun 0-0 draws you'll ever see if it's Atleti Juventus, because if you like hardcore matches, they will give you that, but they also have the quality, and that's awesome. I would love a semifinal between them. Not so much, because maybe Real Madrid will go to the final, but still. Just for entertainment's sake, it would be really awesome to watch Atleti and Juve. It would be really, really cool.
Yeah, that would be just all-out war. And then Real Madrid-Monaco would be... I think Real Madrid are maybe the only team that can eliminate Monaco in the semifinals, because they'll just outscore them. But yeah. Simple as that. They'll just go out and win 8-4 over two legs. They can do that.
If it's a shootout, Real Madrid can outscore everyone. I think if 10 goals is what it takes to advance in a semifinal against Monaco, Real Madrid would score 10 goals, because they just do.
Yeah.
If they have to defend against Monaco, they're dead. If Zidane goes to Monaco and tries to defend for the first 20-30 minutes, he's gonna leave that stadium losing 4-2 or something. But he'd still get the away goals for a second leg of the Bernabeu, which I'm sure would be the case. They're never going to play the second leg away from home, no matter who the opponent is.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
They're not going to play the second leg away from home. I guarantee you that. But I do think that Real Madrid Monaco would be as entertaining as Atleti Juve, but in the other way, because there would be loads of goals and hat tricks from Ronaldo and Mbappe, and then both goalkeepers getting blunders because they're both amazing, but they also can get stupid balls between their legs, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
it would be fun. And to be honest, I think that's what's going to be. I think it's going to be Real Madrid, Monaco, and Juve Atleti. I think that's the semifinal.
I'm convinced we're drawing Real Madrid, although I said the same thing before the quarterfinal draw, but I think we're going to draw them in the semifinal. I don't think UEFA will have much of a... I think UEFA will take pity on the little guy and have one of Juve or Monaco in the final, and they'll just have the Madrid derby slugfest. They'll get it over with now instead of having that be the showpiece for the third time in 4 years.
Yeah, I think Vince McMahon of UEFA is tired of their WrestleMania main event.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
That's too much, The Rock John Cena. That's too much.
Yeah, and this is The Rock John Cena of football right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tired of it. Let's not do it anymore.
Yeah, I honestly don't want to see it because, I'm sorry, it's not a joke, but if it's a Madrid derby in the final, Madrid's going to win. Real Madrid's going to win. So
yeah.
I don't want to see that happen, so I hope it's in the standings.
Yeah, again, Atleti, I think we'll have a bit of a better chance in the semis. Wrapping up the Leicester tie in the second leg, first half, Atleti very clearly outclassed Leicester, but the second half, they made some changes. They went to this really strange, like, 3-4-3, 3-5-2 formation. Simeone eventually countered by putting all four center backs on the pitch because he's Diego Simeone. And, of course, Juan Fran and Felipe Luis had to exit due to injury. But Felipe will be back this weekend. He broke a finger on his right hand, the fourth metacarpal in his right hand, so he'll have protection. He'll be fine. Juan Fran,
of course, he'll be back this weekend.
Yeah,
this is Atletico Madrid, dude. Dudes break bones and play the next game. Of course they do. This is Atleti.
Raul Garcia broke his arm a couple years ago, and he missed like a game. So
yeah,
he broke his freaking arm in the. I think it was in the Copa.
Simeone's not going to take that bitching. you're not going to play with a broken member on your body. How are you?
You have a ruptured, a ruptured spleen? Get out there.
The only reason you're not going is if you're dead, and I'll still resuscitate you. So you're going to play, dude. Because I'm Cholo.
Speaking of that, Saul gave an interview last week, and he said that he took a hit to his kidney against Bayer Leverkusen in the round of 16 a couple of years back, and he has been playing with a catheter ever since, and he's pissed blood after games.
And Simeone is probably Simeone's like, that.
Yeah, that's what Simeone I expected.
Probably watches that and takes pleasure. That's my player.
That's my player. Pissing blood
he
over there.
He's blood.
That's Atletico.
That's Atletico. The red in our jerseys is not a red. It's blood from Saul's body. That's where that comes from. This is the red. It's blood. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't think that's entirely wrong.
Simeone is awesome.
This is the team that once gave Diego Costa horse placenta to get him fit for a Champions League final. So nothing is out the window here.
Yeah.
Also,
I just thought of a horrible joke.
Say it.
No, I cannot say it. But just
message it to me after.
Yeah, absolutely.
Send me a DM.
But let's just say it has something to do with Solanigas being blood and the horse placenta. I'll leave it at that.
All right,
You can imagine the joke later.
I'm putting two and two together here. Just DM me after the show.
Yeah, definitely do, because it's a horrible joke, but I have to tell it to someone.
Yeah, I'll be glad to receive it and not share it with anyone. But I also read this morning that Atleti are now the team with the fewest fouls in the Champions League, which if you haven't watched Atleti a whole lot since the 2014 season, you'd be stunned to hear that. But that's just a further evolution in how this team plays. Atleti don't pick up cards anymore. They don't foul anymore. It's really fascinating.
That's more of a reputation. They're not a defensive team anymore, and they're not a dirty team anymore. They were very clearly that, but as soon as they got the taste of European success, I think Simeone said, okay, to really be a player here in Europe, I have to play well, because Barca, Madrid, and Bayern, they play well. So if I want to get into that stratosphere, I have to evolve the way we play. We won't get away with this for too long. And that just shows how amazing of a coach he is.
Yeah.
Because his previous style worked, but he said, okay, I have to evolve. And he evolved, and the team evolved with them. And like I said, if I wasn't a Barca fan, I would definitely want him in my team. But I don't think he fits Barca, but he's ridiculously talented as a coach.
Yeah, there are only a select few teams that are like Cholo worthy. That's not like snobbery. It's just true. There has to be a certain ethos, a certain history, a certain mentality.
Yeah, I don't think he would convince Neymar to pee blood.
Yeah, no. No, Neymar would be like, screw you, I'm going to Paris.
Yeah. There, I'll lose 6-1 and be humiliated, but will not pee blood.
Not pee in blood just to be out there. No. But yeah, and you mentioned how Atleti have evolved, and they have, and it hasn't been as pronounced an evolution as a lot of people, including us at Into the Calderon, were expecting. We were expecting, you know, oh, Atleti are going to switch to a 4-3-3, Atleti are going to score more goals, play with more possession, more attack. No, it's been much more, the developments have been much more subtle. And now yeah. you're seeing them late in the season, right when you need to see it most. You're seeing it now how these developments are paying off.
Yeah, I think they beat, I don't remember the team they beat, but they beat a team 7-1 this season.
Granada, that was Granada.
Yeah, because they because that was the Isaac Cuenca golazo, I think.
Yeah.
And they won 7-1. I think that was the story of the weekend in Brazil, because they couldn't believe that Atletico Madrid won 7-1.
They scored 7 goals.
Haven't you watched Atletico Madrid for the last year or so? That's what they do. They don't score 7 every game, but they attack that much. And people, like I said, it's subtle, but it's clearly there for everyone to see. They just think the game a lot more than competing. I think that's the best way I can put it. They think a lot more than they tackle.
Yeah, they do. And
it's good to watch.
But
again, just like Monaco, just to go back to the point that we made on Monaco, when they need to go back to defending and parking the bus, they're better than anyone else at doing that.
And we saw that a bit on Tuesday, especially in the second half. And a friend of the pod, David Cartledge, tweeted this out from 442. It wasn't Griezmann's night in front of a goal, but he tracked back so much. He worked so hard in defense, 10 ball recoveries while leading the attack. Just popping up all over the pitch, deep in defense, and near his own box, and then launching forward. That's just, a lot of people only see Griezmann's goals and his assists, which are great, and they're crucial to Atleti, and he is our Messi. But he also does these things that don't
always show. I'm impressed the most about Simeone, how he convinced top 10 players in the sport to track back and defend fullbacks. That's what's amazing to me. The dude finished third in the Ballon d'Or vote, and he's tracking Christian Fuchs in Leicester. That's amazing to me.
The humility and the commitment it takes to do that. Because Griezmann easily could just sod off and just go to England and do his thing there.
Yeah.
But no, that takes commitment. This is why Griezmann's a top 10 player in the world. Not just because of what he can do in attack, but everything else he does. All over the pitch in defense, being selfless, and he was actually too selfless on Tuesday. He had a great chance in the second half, one-on-one with Schmeichel. He tried to pass it off though.
Yeah, he should have shot that.
To Carrasco, and it just fizzled out from there. He should have scored.
But I think Griezmann is willing to pee blood as well. That's like my standard for players.
Is this now the standard?
Yeah, it'd be like my interview. Like, if I'm going to sign that player, are you willing to pee blood? Yeah, you'll come with me. Doesn't matter if you're good or bad. If you will pee blood, I want you on my team.
That is a great measuring stick.
Just let me tell you something else.
Yeah.
You have no idea how glad I am that we're having this conversation in English.
Oh, God.
Because my mom is here in the room.
No
if
way.
If she had any idea of what we're talking about, I wouldn't do a podcast with you ever again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because my mom is kind of impressed that I speak English, so because I can't even speak Portuguese. So she just sits here for the podcast that we do.
Just sits and smiles and nods and doesn't understand that you're talking about peeing blood.
And sometimes she records what I'm saying to show to her friends.
Oh, dear.
And some of her friends will be listening to me talking about horse placenta and blood peeing and thinking that I'm awesome. So thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
You are most definitely welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What do I have to talk about next? I have no idea.
I do have something else. I meant to bring this up on our podcast over the weekend, but Atleti were recently linked with Cesc Fabregas. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, yours in particular. This was from Sport, of course, the Barcelona shills at Sport, that Atleti reportedly think that Fabregas can do what David Villa did a few years back, and kind of revitalize his career in that fashion. What is your take on Fabregas to Atletico and on that rumor?
I think it makes sense. It's not a stupid rumor, which is surprising coming from Sport.
Yeah.
I do, of course, take this with a million grains of salt because Definitely. It's Sport. But I like it because I think looking at Atleti 3 years ago, no way Cesc would ever fit. But I kind of see Cesc doing what Koke does, which is the guy who can defend in midfield but can also play make from deep. And I think that's something that Cesc does probably better than anybody else, certainly in the Premier League. You see the long passes he makes to Diego Costa at Chelsea. That's amazing what he does. He's a very different player today than he was at Barca. At Barca, he was basically a striker, a false nine with Messi. And it kind of worked for a while, but then he just decided he didn't want to play anymore. And I hate him to this day because of it. But he's a good player. I won't deny it. He's a very good player, very underrated player, actually. And I think, but I do think that only makes sense if Koke is leaving, because I cannot see Cesc, Saul, and Koke playing together. It's too attacking of a midfield. And I don't think Cholo, the new Cholo, which is an attacking Cholo, would go for it. I don't think it's secure enough to, even though it's three players, I don't think it's secure enough for a midfield. I think either Saul or Koke are going, and Cesc is the replacement, which is a very good replacement. But I don't see that just an addition to the squad to make the squad stronger, you know? If Cesc comes, he has to play because he's that good. And I don't think he will take another year at Chelsea out and on and off the team. He wants to start. He wants to start every game, and he has the quality to do that. And I don't think he would do it in the current Atleti setup. So either one of the midfielders is going, or one of the current midfielders is going to give up a lot of their attacking intent to accommodate Cesc. And Cholo would have to take a big gamble on his midfield.
That's my problem with this, is that Atleti would have to, we'd have to move to like a 4-2-3-1 or something, or like a 4-2-1. We'd have to move to maybe a diamond, I think. If you're playing Cesc, you have to have two really solid, disciplined pivots playing around him somewhere, because he's going to mess up if he plays in a deeper role, and that will drive Simeone absolutely mad. If you play him in a more advanced role, it's better. Atleti could use another creative midfielder. Koke can fill that role, but Koke does a lot more than just that. Pigeonholing Koke as a number 10 makes the team weaker. Atleti do need another creative type, but I'm not sure it should be Fabregas. Simeone would have to overhaul the tactics.
Yeah, I think, and I don't think as that's something that I really think about when I think about a signing is that guy good enough? Is that guy worthy of you changing the thing that makes you really good?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And I don't think Cesc is that guy. No. If you're signing a proper number 10 and you have to change your tactics because of that guy, let's just give an example. And it's probably a controversial one because I don't think a lot of people agree with me that that guy's as good as I think. But Mesut Ozil, I think he's a ridiculous player. But you have to completely change the way you play to accommodate him. But he's worth that. I think he's that good. That's just, of course, my opinion. Or a David Silva, you have to change your style a little bit to accommodate a guy like that because he's not going to give you a lot defensively, but he's a ridiculous playmaker. So guys like that, I think, are worth changing your style of play or your tactic or your system. I don't think Cesc is that guy. I think if you have a system, for instance, if you have a system where you have, you don't need a number 8, maybe you need a second number, if you don't need a number 10, you need a second number 8, you play with two weights, for instance, Koke and Cesc, I think he's very good for that. But I don't think he would do that. I don't think it would work that way. I think it's too much change for a guy who's not really worth making that many changes, if it makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. But Atleti seems set on getting a star player, at least one, before the move to a stadium called Wanda. I don't really want it to be Fabregas, though, but we'll see what happens this summer. And of course, that's contingent on if the transfer ban gets overturned. We're expecting to hear about that next week, actually. The 24th of April is supposed to be when the decision comes down.
Wasn't the Real Madrid overturned? Oh, whatever. Let's continue.
Yeah, of course it did. Of course it got overturned. So theirs got overturned in December or January. Atleti are expecting theirs to be overturned, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. What else we got? You got anything else, Renato? Anything you want to plug before we go?
No. That took too much of your time.
it's been great, though.
Thanks. I love coming on your podcast. I really do.
Yeah, I love having you on. These discussions are always great. You can check out, as far as my writing at Into the Calderon, we still have the interview with the interview I did with David Villa. That is still up, and it's still pertinent, as Atleti are still in the Champions League and still have a chance of winning it. I spoke with David about what Atleti need to do to win the Champions League, so go find that on our site if you haven't read it yet. Other than that, I think that is it. So let's sign off. I'll ask Renato to stay on for just a second after I sign off. But Renato, thank you so much for coming on. You're always great and entertaining as ever.
Thank you for having me.
I hope your mother did not understand a word you said. Anything.
Me too.
Not a
me
word.
Me too, because I'll have to say goodbye to you forever.
Yeah, there'll be no more of this. But that's Renato Gonzalez. So Renato, where can you be found on Twitter?
Surprisingly, it's the same handle, at Renato DSG.
There we go. All right, no handle change for you this time, but maybe next time I have you on, you'll have a handle change.
Probably.
You can follow me at JB Barren. That's JBBEREN. You can follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. Also follow Barca Blaugrains. You also do writing at Bitter and Blue, which is the Manchester City blog. Give them a follow as well. We're all friends here at SB Nation.
And except the Real Madrid blog. I'm kidding.
Yeah. I like those guys, just not their team.
Yeah.
You can you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Thanks to the many of you who did so in the past week. We've seen it, we've noticed it, really appreciate it. Also, as far as Colchonero Chat is concerned, you can find all new and archived episodes of this very program on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Colchonero Chat. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you on the flip. Adios.